So I will talk about the universality class, or the dynamic universality class of the QCD critical point. And just to give an overview, the critical point which I will be talking about on the phase diagram of QCD, temperature versus baryon chemical potential, is somewhere here. Again, I will not repeat what you probably already heard if you were to attend yesterday's seminar by Dominic. Here is a graph to illustrate how much we know theoretically about the location of the critical point, and how this corresponds to experimentally accessible region on the phase diagram of QCD. So here I collected all the results which I could find in the papers, mostly using models. These are the black points of various types, and recently also the lattice calculations, which are in green, so I used the papers which gave the number for the coordinates of the critical point in the TMU plane, and this is how it looks like. I added also the years to this because experimentalists asked me. One problem here is that when the experimentalists try to convince the committee to get a running time to scan the phase diagram, one of the first questions that one of the first objections is that we don't know where this point is, right? However, different points have different weight. So there are, so if you see where the most recent predictions are located, they are roughly somewhere in that region.
So CO, what is it?
CO, it's a method which the authors call composite operator. It's the Italian composite operator. Essentially, it's a variant.
The idea of the populations.
The idea is it's a variant of Schlinger-Dyson approach. With some modifications. The round dots are experimental points. So these are the location of the freeze-out points of the heavy ion collisions at different energies. As you increase the energy of the collision, the direct information we get about the collision is the information about the final state. That is, if you think of the evolution of the collision with time, then it can be likened to the Big Bang, in the sense that that the system maintains thermal equilibrium only until the mean free pass or the interactions are effective in keeping up with expansion. As the temperature, equilibrium temperature falls down, the particles must rescatter to adjust to new. This can only happen until the point where the density is so low that the expansion rate, the equilibration rate falls behind the expansion rate. So this point is the freeze-out point. Essentially, the idea is similar to the way that we understand the cosmic microwave background radiations. The photons we see have not been interacting for billions of years, but nevertheless, they maintain the perfect thermal equilibrium, thermal distribution. So do the particles which observed in heavy ion collisions can be also the spectra and the particle ratios can be also fit very to a very reasonable accuracy by a simple thermal model, where the abundances and the spectra are given by some by a couple of parameters, temperature and chemical potential. And so you can represent these conditions on the first die.
But this mu and that p are not the same as the
No. They have.
So
they need not.
The calculations are all for something else.
Yes, that's what I wanted to say. Okay. That this diagram should not be viewed as a comparison between theory and experiment. Rather, it's a plot which shows the feasibility of locating the critical point experimentally. In other words, if the critical point lies somewhere on the phase diagram, so that we can create freeze-out conditions. That we can create freeze-out conditions close to this point. Then, by varying the energy of the collision, you can scan the phase diagram and see that when you approach the critical point, the signatures which you look for will increase and then disappear as you go away from the critical point. So this is roughly the location of the points on the phase diagram which you can probe using the Hevian collision.
But how far is their phase transition line from the freeze-out points?
Right. So these two lines here are two lattice calculations which the only significance of these lines is the slope or the curvature at zero temperature. And the beginning is roughly what is the critical temperature at zero chemical potential, which is 117 MeV or so. So this is roughly speaking where the crossover line goes.
So because of the crossover, not the proper phase transition?
At finite quark mass, yes. Right.
I think the question was, why do you say it's only the kilometer?
Because they cannot do simulations on the lattice.
As a level, that would be mm-hmm.
Right. Well, there are few simulations which claim that their results can be trusted away from the, but it's not obvious. It's not very well controllable calculation. All right. So this was just part of the motivation for what I'm going to be discussing. Now, so the next question arises is what are the signatures that we're going to look for? And the most natural proposition is to look for the critical fluctuation. And the idea is simply that the since the end point of the it doesn't matter. It could be a baryon number. It could be some other quantities. That's not what I want to concentrate in this talk. I will use a more general term. So for the susceptibilities that we since the susceptibilities should diverge at the critical point, as they always do, one would expect that the fluctuations, which are proportional to the magnitude of fluctuations, corresponding fluctuations are proportional to the susceptibility, and therefore they will also diverge. Now, of course, in a finite system which evolves during finite time, there are limits on how large the fluctuations will never diverge. The susceptibility will never diverge. So what are the limitations? What cuts off this divergence? First of all, of course, even in the infinite system, you have to be exactly at the critical point in order to do this. And then in order of increasing importance, the system of a finite size, which is the Hevian result, the fireball which is created in Hevian collision has a finite size. And the way that the final size cuts off the size of the fluctuation is simply because the susceptibility, according to the scaling hypothesis, is near the critical point proportional to a certain power of the correlation lengths. So if the correlation lengths cannot exceed a certain bound, that would be the bound for the that would give the bound for the susceptibility. Also, and this is perhaps the most stringent constraint, is that the system is not static. It evolves over finite time, and one can translate this bound into the bound on the growth of the susceptibility, again using the scaling and universality. In this case, what you would find is that the maximum correlation length is related to the typical time during which the system is allowed, which the system has in order to reach equilibrium, to some power, which is 1 over z, where z is what is what is known as dynamical critical exponent. It is this exponent which I would try to determine for QCD. Now, so the definition of this exponent can be given in the following way. So suppose that we are in the vicinity of the critical point, so the correlation length is large, almost macroscopic, and then the hypothesis of dynamic scaling tells us that all characteristic times, or the typical time that the system will take to equilibrate, will be proportional to the power of this correlation length. This power is defined as this exponent z, dynamical critical exponent. Again, now the hypothesis of dynamic universality, similar to the usual universality hypothesis, states that this exponent is very robust and depends only on the dynamic universality class of the theory. However, the problem is a little more complicated than in the case of the static critical behavior. We are a lot more familiar with classifying the system according to the static critical behavior, because the static critical behavior is practically completely determined by the dimensionality of the system and the symmetry of the order parameter, or the dimensionality of the order parameter. However, dynamic universality class is not necessarily corresponds to the in one-to-one correspondence to the static universality class. Two systems with identical static critical behavior, for example, Ivan model and liquid gas phase transition critical point, can be in different dynamic universality class. And in this particular case, which will be relevant to our discussion, it's easy to understand. In the case of the Erding model, in the case of the liquid gas phase transition, the order parameter is a conserved density. So when we're talking about relaxation time, relaxation times for this quantity will be determined by diffusion, which are, of course, slower for large distances than the relaxation times in the Erding model order parameter. Because in this case, I'm talking about a very idealized situation.
Really think about what happens so quick. Mm-hmm. This fireball.
Yes.
Is not spherical.
Presumably, it would add additional complications. I consider this as a necessary step before one can tackle a more realistic problem. So let us turn to the question of the dynamic universality class of the QCD critical point. And here the problem is really partly a confusion rather than a real problem. So my purpose will be to clarify the situation. So the static universality class of the QCD critical point is practically beyond doubt. It's the universality class of the Erding model, which is the same as that of the liquid gas phase transition. However, the dynamic universality class is not clear because it depends on what are the relevant hydrodynamic modes. So we need to identify what the hydrodynamic modes are, right, the hydrodynamic theory, and then we can map it onto a given onto a set of universality classes which we know. So what are the hydrodynamic modes for the theory? A simple way to identify the hydrodynamic modes is to think in the following way. Hydrodynamics modes are those modes which relax or can relax or arbitrarily slowly for sufficiently large distances. So in order for the modes to be slow in that sense, there has to be a good reason. The good reason for the mode to be slow is it is a density of a conserved charge or a conserved quantity. Then it can only relax by diffusion, which therefore means that on large length scales it will relax arbitrarily slowly. So the first, the primary candidates for the hydrodynamic modes are the density of the conserved quantities, which are of course the energy and the momentum density. That's the first line. Then we should consider all the density of the conserved charges, which in this case would be the baryon number density. And in the case of QCD, there is also, and in other system, when we approach the critical point, there is another mode, the fluctuations of the order parameter also becomes arbitrarily slow because it's because of the slowing down, critical slowing down. The order parameter should also be considered as the additional hydrodynamic mode.
But it's not associated.
No, it's a mode which we would expect near the, at the critical point only.
Or
the
second order phase transition.
Or the second order phase transition. Yes, of course.
Z equals 2,
not 0.04, right. Of course, if we have additional symmetries, like in the case when we're in the Kara limit, we should also consider the Goldstone modes as additional slow parameters, which would be the case if we were in the Kara limit. But in this case, we are not. We're considering QCD with massive pions. So pions are not hydrodynamic modes.
And real pions, you think they are? Mm-hmm. How much flow theory makes them heavy enough to be?
Theoretically, yes. Mm-hmm. Practically, it's a quantitative question. Mm-hmm. All right.
So your field is you don't want to commit for them?
I can comment on that. There is, okay. Of course, if you include pions, then you are in a different universality class, both statically.
What I'm asking is in real pions, how should they? What's the best? What do you feel in terms?
Well, if you are formulating a strict question of what is universality class,
I'm formulating a question about what you measure.
Well, then I cannot answer that question because I need a more quantitative
question. Well, I'm measuring pounds coming out. I mean, that's what's coming out most of the time, right?
Yes.
And by looking at them, I should be able to tell that hopefully in some way
well,
would be hidden in them the fact that the T was a PC. Or should I see a peak in there?
Well, there are two. In this case, one can compare the correlation length of the pion or the frequency typical, which is about a Fermi, right, with a typical length scale, which we want to apply on hydrodynamic distribution, which is about 6 Fermi. Since the pion's correlation length is much smaller than that scale, we can, with the precision which neglects 1/6, neglect them. So, when we discuss hydrodynamics.
The level of energy of motion has to be increased if you have the critical point. the structure function has a tick in that region.
But not in the pions channel.
The pions can be manifested in the end.
The pions are massive everywhere on the. There's a gap in the spectral functions for the pions everywhere. So the question is whether the whether these hydrodynamic modes tell us what the universality class is. And the problem is that there are two modes, one which is diffusive and one which relaxes locally, because it's not a conserved quantity. So if there was only one mode, then we would map it into liquid gas universality class. If there was only the other mode, then we would map it to the Ising model universality class. And if there are two modes, we don't know what to do. Well, now we do, but...
in the whole house, there is no example.
There is no example, but one can see that if you look a little closer, that the QCD, a critical point, maps into liquid gas universality class. And that's to show this is the purpose of my talk. So let me first begin with a simpler consideration of this static universality class. So our problem is that we have two candidates for the order parameter. So we can either consider the chiral condensate Q bar Q, or we can consider the baryon number density. Both of them jump across the first order phase transition leading to the critical endpoint. So both of them can be used to distinguish the phases and identify the location of the critical point. However, when we go to the dynamic class, they are not equivalent because one of them is diffusive and another one is relaxation. So let's try to treat them more evenly or democratically. And let's begin with statics. Let's imagine that instead of considering Ginzburg-Landau effective potential only for one other parameter, let's consider both of them and see what would be the result, result of this. So I will call F the free energy or the Ginzburg-Landau effective potential, and we'll be only interested, what will be relevant for us is the behavior of the of the part which doesn't contain gradients, V of sigma and n, and we shall expand around the minimum where sigma and n are deviations around the equilibrium. We neglect higher orders, and the important part here is that sigma and n mix. Since there are no quantum numbers which distinguish sigma and n, we must write a term with a generic coefficient, which I will denote B, which mixes them, right?
Isn't that a hidden character? You're sort of assuming that the order of magnitude of sigma is the same as the order of magnitude of n. In order to make to say these are the terms you
choose. Yes.
But suppose that the physics would be that sigma has to be the order of magnitude of n to some power.
What I'm assuming is that I can write the expansion for the free energy. Then the typical magnitude.
That's the same thing.
Yes.
It is analytic and sigma.
Yes.
Suppose that for physical reason you would say that sigma really goes again to the sub. I mean, that's really.
Well, for that there has to be a good reason. I don't see any reason for that. Right. So one reason would be the symmetry. But I can translate it basically how we determine what is the typical size of sigma n is basically this F determines the probability.
And it's just.
No, sigma is the fluctuation of the other prime.
Right, the fluctuation in the energy.
Yes, yes. And the probability. Yes, the probability of a they can fluctuate independently from each other, right? They are two different operators. The equitation fly is, there is no operator equation which relates to it. They are correlated, but this correlation was expressed by this.
No, I wanted right? One of them to be supposed.
So the fact that they are correlated is already present here, right? And in the following, in other way, what we call the typical magnitude of the fluctuation is included in this effective potential because it tells us what's the probability distribution of any fluctuation to occur. Now, what happens at the critical point? The critical point is the point where this quadratic form degenerates, when one of the directions becomes flat. So this determinant should vanish at the critical point. Now we can ask, what is this flat direction? And one can see, it will be useful for the next transparency, that it's some linear combination of sigma and n. In other words, even though we included both sigma and n fluctuations, at the critical point, only one linear combination really becomes critical. So it has whose fluctuation grows when we approach the critical point. In other words, if we, for example, measured this formula will be also useful. If we measure the susceptibility, either of sigma or of n, both of them would display the singularity at the critical point, and simply due to the fact that both fluctuations of sigma and n contain some part of this critical model. Okay. So now let me go to the dynamic equation. So in order to discuss dynamic universality class, we have to identify the set of hydrodynamic modes and write the equations for that. The dynamic equations which the effective description of the of this mode cannot be provided by the Hamiltonian because the Lagrangian because of the dissipation, right? However, we can account we can describe these modes by using equations with noise, right? So the equations here, which I wrote for sigma and n. Can be obtained since we are interested, we will be interested only in linearized version of this equation. So the, in other words, the equation simply states that the rate of change of a variable, which for example in this case sigma, is proportional to the generalized forces, which are the derivatives of the free energy, static free energy, with respect proportional to the linear combination of the generalized forces, with the coefficients, which are the kinetic coefficients in the series. So now for the equation of sigma, we choose to call this coefficient gamma, and it's negative because the sigma wants to relax to its minimum. For the n, choose to call this coefficient lambda, and they must be a derivative because n is a conserved quantity. So the integral of n should vanish. Another way to say it is that the n obeys conservation equation together with the current. So on the right hand side, what we must have is the divergence of some current. And by Euclidean invariance, it means that there has to be a square of the. It has to contain Laplace. So this term and this term are simple. This term again is similar to this one. It's also generalized force with a different coefficient. I will call lambda tilde. It's another kinetic coefficient. And a similar term here is related to the term here by the Onsager relationship. There has to be. In other words, this the way that this equation is constructed is such that together with the correlation function of the noises, it reproduces to quadratic order, to the order which we are working, the equilibrium distribution. So the idea is that the hydrodynamic equation involves slow variant modes which are subject to dissipation and external noise which represents the effect of the faster variant modes integrated out. And since we will be working in the limit of low frequencies and large distance scales, on that scale the noises must be all delta functions in time and space. It's easy to see that the only choice we need to make is just the strength of these noises, which is chosen in such a way as to reproduce it. So we will not be concerned with the correlation function of the noises, but what we will be looking at is what are the dispersion relations for the modes which are described by this equation. So now, having this these equations, we can substitute the free energy and now solve for the frequencies as a function of the wave number here. And we find that there are two modes here, one which is diffusive, which means that its frequency is imaginary, so it is a relaxational mode, and the rate of the relaxation is inversely proportional to the size of the fluctuation, right, in space, squared. Another mode is relaxational mode. This mode relaxes on a scale which is microscopic. Both gamma and A are microscopic parameters. So this mode is fast and should not be considered as a hydrodynamic mode at all. So similarly to the static case, after we after we considered both sigma and n, we see that there's only one mode which is fully hydrodynamic, and this mode is diffusive. Right. One can also see by looking at this matrix what is this mode. One can see that the diffusive mode is just corresponds to the mode which was identified in the static case with the critical mode. So there is only one critical mode, and it is a diffusive mode. This is a simple consequence of this equation.
Do you have a feeling of the ratio B over A?
No.
So you can't say that it's more in the order than it would be in the
sigma. It should be of order Fermi to the appropriate power determined by the dimension.
So the two, the diffusive at the...
Well, in this case...
They're not necessarily perpendicular or taking out?
No, they're not necessarily. There is no condition that they should be orthogonal. Well, these two modes are not, of course. The mode which is relaxational is simply the mode which involves only deviation of sigma from its equilibrium value. It's easy to understand because the reason that this mode, which involves both sigma and n, is diffusive is because it involves n. It involves the fluctuation of the baryon number density, which if you create a constant baryon number fluctuation, it will never relax because the baryon number is conserved. Right. So whether it's accompanied by sigma or not, it doesn't matter. What happens is that the fluctuation which is truly hydrodynamic involves both the deviation of the fluctuation of the baryon number density and chiral condensate in a fixed proportion determined by some microscopic physics. And any deviation from it, in other words, any fluctuation of sigma which doesn't involve n, relaxes to this ratio on a microscopic scale. So in other words, there's only one mode which involves both n and sigma in this ratio. So, all right, so we have a mode which is arbitrarily slow. How do we know that there is a...
Is this guaranteed to happen? Just, I mean, all you have written is some quadratic potential and then the equations are linearized. And
yes.
It looks to me like the statement about some matrix that happens.
Yeah. In some sense, what we did, we included only the most, we included all the most general terms which we can include, determined by the symmetry and the conditions which I said. For example, that the density of the baryon charge has to relax via diffusion. And so it's a rather robust result, but it's easy to understand also physically. If you think of what the meaning of this result is, it simply tells you that this dynamics of the slowest mode, which is truly hydrodynamic, is simply the dynamics of the baryon number density, and sigma adjusts to it on a microscopic scale. Okay. So these equations contain, in other words, to look at these equations is that these equations contain in a compact form information about correlation functions. Since they are linear equations, two-point correlation functions, but now in real time.
If some coefficient in those equations accidentally was zero, which one? So lambda tilde, for example, if it was zero, would decouple them completely.
Yeah.
Then you would have only the coupling from the potential.
Yeah. Yeah. But that is a special situation which need to be which we need to have a good reason, right? So that would mean that.
Yeah, but what I was thinking is that. Right, so then you say, well, if there is coupling between the dynamics, it must be the other sigma.
Yes. 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 In other words, we allow all the couplings which are not forbidden. And we assume that they have a generic value of the order which is determined by the microscopic scale. So all dimensionless parameters should be of order 1, roughly speaking. So now, if we look at this mode, we see that the diffusion constant of this mode, which we can think of as a baryon number density, vanishes at the critical point because delta vanishes. One can also write the expression for delta in terms of the coefficients C and D, and one can look at these two terms as in the following way. Just another way of looking at this is like saying that the diffusion, the negative sign here means that the modes relax, the fluctuation relax to the equilibrium. So at the critical point, there are two terms. There are two terms. One which in this equation, one which causes the diffusion, which is relaxation. Another which is anti-relaxation. So it's the term which seems like it wants to amplify. They balance each other exactly at the critical point. The reason that this term appears can be understood in the following way. When we approach the critical point, we approach the region where if we go to delta negative, right, we are basically in the region of the first order phase transition where if we sit at the top of the maximum of the effective potential, the system tends to amplify the fluctuations which leads to the phase decomposition decay of the unstable state. Okay, now once we identified the mode in this C ring at the critical point, let us look a little better on the, we can already talk about critical indices. So let us first look at the relationship between the diffusion constant and the baryon number susceptibility. If we look at this equation, which we derived in the trivial transparency, and compare it to the equation for the susceptibility to the baryon number, we can derive this simple relationship. So the diffusion constant is inversely proportional to the baryon number times the kinetic coefficient lambda. This equation, in fact, although we derived it in this mean field approximation where we worked on the two-linear order, in fact, is correct even beyond this approximation. And it's a very simple argument. So imagine that we begin with the fluctuation of the baryon density. It would correspond to a fluctuation in the chemical potential proportional to the coefficient of proportionality, which is what we define as the baryon number susceptibility inverse. If that fluctuation varies with in space, then it means that there will be a gradient of this chemical potential, which we can think of as the field strength associated with the baryon number. Now, the kinetic coefficient lambda is nothing but the baryon number baryon number conductivity coefficient. So it's a coefficient between the baryon number current and this electric field, which is a gradient of the chemical potential of the baryon charge. And therefore, substituting the previous relationship, we find the relationship between the baryon number current and the gradient of the baryon number density, which defines the diffusion constant. So now, since we know what the diffusion constant, we can find the typical relaxation time, which is proportional to the scale, with the largest fluctuation sizes is about the correlation length times d to the minus 1. Now, the correlation length diverges the relaxation time diverges because of for two reasons. First, because the correlation length diverges, but also the diffusion coefficient also, so diffusion also slows down. Slowing down of the decrease of the diffusion coefficient is controlled by the exponent of the, which is a static exponent of the divergence of the susceptibility, baryon number susceptibility, which is psi to the power 2 minus theta. Adding these two exponents, we find that the critical exponent in this model is about 4. Theta is in the Ising model, static energy class is very small, so the 4%.
I don't quite understand. I mean, you got the theta is there because you sort of took into account critical fluctuations only in the space direction.
Yes.
But you are not taking into account, you're dealing with the time direction totally classic, you know, right? Totally. And you got
no
fluctuations in the frequency direction?
No. Which would, no. That, I think.
I mean, I could imagine an anomalization group set up which integrates not only k but also an omega.
Yes.
Therefore,
yes. But, yes.
Be a z for mm-hmm. one,
yeah, but such,
z, such, an, mm-hmm.
such analysis can be done, and you can see that the terms which so you would have to consider nonlinear terms in this equation.
Right.
That they will be irrelevant. They will not change.
They would be irrelevant.
They would be irrelevant. Yes. So this would be the answer in a model which only involves the diffusion of the baryon number, which is what in the classification of Hochenberg and Halperin is model B. However, what we should consider in the case of QCD is six modes, not only two. So the candidates are the energy and momentum densities, which are four, And then two modes which we've just considered, which leads to the model being a society class. Now, if we take into account the fact that only one linear combination of these two modes is truly hydrodynamic, the set of hydrodynamic modes reduces to 5. So the energy and momentum density and the conserved density, like the baryon number density, essentially.
You don't need to redo the entire analysis.
And you don't have to redo. It just maps this set of hydrodynamic modes maps onto the liquid gas dynamic universality class.
But in a sense, Misha, you could include epsilon in your previous equations.
Yes. Strictly speaking, what we should do is now to write the hydrodynamic equations for all five or even six modes, if you are not sure what to do with the sigma, right? And then what you would find is that there will be five modes which relax arbitrarily slowly, right? So this epsilon phi and n would be there will be five modes which are linear combinations of these six, which will be relaxing arbitrarily slowly when wave number q of the fluctuation goes to zero, and one will be the relaxational mode analogous to the pure sigma fluctuation in the model B without energy and momentum. All right. So you can in principle write down. It's not very difficult. You can write down these equations and see that when you diagonalize the that's what you would find. In fact, when you consider the limit q goes to zero of this mode, only two modes relax at a typical rate proportional to q squared. Is that there are only two diffusive modes here, which is the conserved density, the baryon charge density, and the transverse component of pi, right, of the momentum, right? So the relaxation here is just the diffusion, and in this case it's due to shear viscosity, right? While the longitudinal components E and pi, they mix with some addition of N also to these two modes produce a mode which we call a sound, right? Which whose typical frequency, the rate of change, is proportional to the first power of Q. So when Q goes to zero, the sound decouples, in the sense that you can average over fluctuation of that two modes. So what is left is only actually three modes, one diffusive and three diffusive modes. And these equations are the equations for the model H.
But these others are still sort of, if you talk about it practically, so you have nothing is going to remain, of course. The other two also sort of more important.
Yeah, of course, of course. On the practical level, you probably cannot separate the scale, yes, the scales. Theoretically, you can. And so I will only review the what is known about the universality class of this model, and in particular what I need is to justify the answer for the critical explain where the answer for the critical exponent z, which is now 3, comes from. It comes from the fact that this equation, as I argued, will still hold. However, the divergence of the the vanishing of the diffusion constant still holds, but it vanishes slightly slower. There is additional power of psi with another critical exponent, which is now purely dynamical. In order to calculate it, you must consider the terms which you mentioned before. So you must consider nonlinear terms in the hydrodynamic equations and iterate them using some randomization group like approach, then you can calculate this exponent, for example, in epsilon expansion. That's the answer. So this exponent is close to 1.
This is the normal measure for 4 mode.
This is
the epsilon which measures.
This is 4 minus d minus. This is 4 minus d. Epsilon is 4. It's a regular epsilon expansion.
So it's the nonlinear mode is only in the direction, I guess, of the flat direction, right? It's like the delta versus the direction.
Mm. So the coupling, well, the nonlinear terms which you have to include are involving now the coupling between this mode, which is the the soft mode near the critical point, and the transverse component of the momentum, which are subject to shear viscosity, right? And essentially, this modifications come in the calculation through the loops, which involve this coupling.
And the coefficients of these nonlinear terms, they are fixed by the symmetry. They are not kind of new kinetic coefficients.
No, these coefficients of these terms are not fixed by this symmetry, but well, as usual in the randomization group, that they are running, right? So.
But you said you can have some Kubotan type formulas for those coefficients.
Not sure. Not sure what exactly you asked. Maybe I should ask you afterwards. Okay. So, all right. And so, in order to find this critical exponent, one needs to do a normalization group calculation or epsilon expansion calculation. However, this relationship, there is a relationship between, there is a weak divergence also in the shear viscosity in this case, which has a similar origin. But the exponent x theta is related to the exponent x lambda by a simple scaling relationship, which can be understood without doing much calculation. I can do it if you ask me. So in other words, now if we combine this result, we find that with the divergence of the Bayer number susceptibility, we find that the fusion coefficient vanishes, but a little slower by x lambda. So in other words, maybe I should explain this. The physical reason for diffusion coefficient to be larger with energy and momentum coupling included has to do with the fact that the diffusion in this of the baryon number is now aided, has additional channel or additional mechanism, which is basically convection. So there are fluctuations of the energy of the momentum flow, which carry the baryon number, and these fluctuations enhance the diffusion the baryon number diffusion in this way. So in other words, if you now put this all together into the expression for Z, one can see that the exponent Z is around 3. It's approximately 1 less than what we had in model B when there was no coupling to energy and momentum. So the convection of the baryon number speeds up the equilibration near the which reduces the exponent z by about 1. And so this is my conclusion. So what I wanted to show is that the problem of the dynamic neuroscience class, which is due to the presence of two potentially potential candidates for the hydrodynamic mode, sigma and n, can be solved if one considers the mixing between these two modes. This mixing leaves, as a result of this mixing, we're left with only one hydrodynamic mode, which is diffusive. And therefore, the neuroscience class is almost trivially that of model H. So practically, that means that the critical exponent is 3, which is bigger than we would have in the model with relaxation order parameter like sigma, but it's smaller than in the model B where there was no convection, right? And a little more practical, that also means that the correlation to Z is quite large. The previous estimates were based on Z of the typical effects in area and collision, based on Z of order 2 and 2.2 or so. So it means that the correlation length is not that large. However, one should remember that the typical effects are square of the correlation length, which makes it a little better from the point of view of the observation. Thank you.